welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is your host, Cindy Faye Solomon. Delighted to be with you today on Wednesday, June 11th. I'm broadcasting live out of the Oakland Hills in the East Bay from San Francisco, just over the Bay Bridge at studio132.com with six-time Emmy-winning sound producer BZ Lewis. And today we are talking about managing internal politics with Mike Gottsby, which is something that isn't talked about enough, but a key issue that product managers, product marketing managers, certainly innovation managers, change agents, and anyone involved in startups or disrupting a technology deals with working cross-functionally on a regular basis. But before we get there, let me tell you about the Global Product Management Talk. We're a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We regularly have broadcast discussions of vital issues affecting professionals passionate about product excellence, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, methodology, technology, and everything else related to product excellence. You can find us on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. That is our Twitter handle if you're tweeting today. We're at prodmgmttalk and follow us on Twitter. Use the hashtag #PRODMGMTTALK if you'd like to show up in the Twitter stream and participate in today's show. But follow us for regular updates of shows. The archives from the over 120 shows, including our syndicated shows, Competitive Intelligence, as well as our partner in Columbia, Distilled Innovation, which broadcasts Google Hangouts in Spanish. You can find all of the archives at blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. I am at Cindy F. Solomon, and I am passionate about people and product excellence. These conversations over the past couple of years have led to the startup product movement for product excellence, which is about forwarding product leaders, product professionals, and excellent products in all size organizations. There are over 18 communities worldwide. You can find out more about the startup product movement at startupproduct.com. And I'd like to do a shout out to some of our communities who have live events, in-person events coming up, such as the Startup Product Talks Boston community. Next Wednesday, June 18th, is an in-person event at LEAF, which is near Kendall Square in Cambridge. They are talking about innovating your way into your customers' hearts. And Angelo Ferenzi, an entrepreneur from Ascendo, is doing the presentation. If you are in the Boston area or the Cambridge area, definitely join in for some great networking and an opportunity to build a community. LEAF is a great organization. They're 3 years old. They're a rapidly growing tech company at the forefront of the revolution and changing the way brick-and-mortar merchants do business. So they're very committed to forwarding the startup product movement and building the startup product Boston community. There's over 350 people there. So definitely go to startupproduct.com under meetups, look for the Boston, and join the community and attend. Also, coming up right here in the San Francisco Bay Area next week, we are meeting at General Assembly in San Francisco to talk about less is more, how to stand out by doing less than everyone else, with our speaker, Eric Bierler, who's a co-founder of Squiggle, which is a collaboration app. Very excited to hear about designing for simplicity, and which is very important. In an age where software has all sorts of bells and whistles and too many features. So he'll be talking about simplifying. Again, go to starterproduct.com, look under meetups, and get in touch. Also, a shout out to our Startup Product community in Asheville, North Carolina. There is a conference going on there, and Glenn Gefkin is speaking at a webinar this Friday that I am moderating online. It is an AIPMM webinar. Join us. He'll be talking about the importance of culture to product development. So, yes, if you would like to have your product event promoted on the Global Product Management Talk, we get up to 30,000 listeners per episode. Get in touch with me, Cindy@startupproduct.com. If you'd like to speak, demo, start a community, this is your avenue in to reach a worldwide community of passionate product people. I want to thank our sponsor, the AIPMM. They are the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. They are at AIPMM.com and on the web at AIPMM. They were founded in 1998 and they promote excellence in product management education. They are the only worldwide certifying body of product professionals, guaranteeing that product professionals are operating at peak performance for their corporate members. They, you can get a certification in product management, in product marketing management, in agile product management, in innovation leadership, and in brand management through the AIPMM. And as I mentioned before, I am delighted when they ask me to moderate a webinars on Friday mornings. They have an excellent weekly AIPMM webinar series. Just go to AIPMM.com, look under webinars, and you will see the upcoming Friday ones coming up. Thank you to Webcast Digest, at Webcast Digest, daily curated educational free online events for your continuous learning. You can find out about them also at startupproduct.com under Webcast. For only $5 a month, you can subscribe and get access to up to 20 daily webinars, online free digital events. You get the registration URLs right from the calendar from all kinds of vendors and in 8 different categories, from leadership to agile to project management to online learning to marketing and all kinds of other things. Go to at Webcast Digest and follow. Hey, there was a Pipeline virtual conference and hub that happened last week, but it is still open and all the resources are available on demand. The Pipeline virtual conference and hub for innovative product development, again, at startupproduct.com. You can find out more about it and just follow the blog at startupproduct.com and you will get updates of all these things. Starting next week at Tech Liminal, if you are in the Bay Area, is Product Therapy Tuesdays. Bring your product, your dilemma, your issues, your challenges to get learn how to break through. These are regular weekly therapy sessions to forward your product and your product careers. And so I'm very excited to have Mike Gospe on the show today. He was on the show originally before we became a live broadcast when we were initially a Twitter chat specifically. And Mike is an expert in marketing strategy, and he's developed an excellent course called Mastering Product Positioning, and he's generously made it available for 50% off. It's now up at Udemy. And I will be tweeting out the URL for that. Again, if you go to startupproduct.com, you'll see the direct links to that. He's also made a positioning statement download available to the community. This is very, very powerful stuff, so I'm very excited to talk with him. But we were talking offline not only about positioning and product marketing, but the challenges that product managers and product marketers face. So let me read you the intro. What are some of the best practices when it comes to managing internal politics for product managers and marketers? Mike is going to share with us some tales from the trenches, including the best and worst advice he ever received as a product marketer, how to work effectively with people who don't report to you, how to best manage your boss, which I call managing up, and how to smooth the road between product management, marketing, and sales. He's also the author of a bunch of great marketing high ground books, including the Marketing High Ground, as well as customer advisory board books. Again, you can find out more about them from startupproduct.com. Look under books, and there is links to them. And so Mike Gospe is a noted author, accomplished marketing strategist, and corporate leader who understands what it takes to market and sell to today's business-to-business companies. With more than 28 years of experience, his expertise is in integrated marketing and voice of the customer programs. He's also the co-founder of Kickstart Alliance, which is a marketing and sales leadership consulting group. His workshops, online courses, lectures, and services energize teams, helping them get real work done while guiding them to the next level of marketing excellence. So let's see, what else did I want to say about Mike? Why don't we bring you on? Mike, are you there with us?
I sure am, Cindy. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Great. Is there anything I left out?
No, I think you did a great introduction. And, you know, you raise a really interesting point, this whole notion of managing internal politics. And, in fact, the number one cause of an early death of a product manager or product marketer is due to some variation of internal politics. And yet, as you described in your intro, it's kind of it's the untalked about subject. It's very difficult to talk about. And in fact, the real learnings people have about internal politics only happen when either the product marketer or product manager is being shown the door out, or they're running screaming towards the door thinking, I can't work here anymore. Dealing with technologies and products is easy. Dealing with people, though, and internal politics is really hard. And so that's why I'm really excited to be here talking with you and the audience today about the subject of internal politics. It needs to have much more discussion to help people through the challenges working in the workplace.
Yeah, and, you know, that was really one of the things that occurred to me and has really inspired this whole thing, that dealing with people is difficult. Sure, there's best practices, but it kind of requires, the professional continuously growing in their own authenticity. And that's the other thing that I've noticed as well in businesses where, you know, people used to kind of compartmentalize and they were business professionals and they behaved in such a manner. Now people are individuals who happen to be doing that job, which I think is a great forward. It is a great thing that people are whole beings, ideally, and are able to operate as whole beings even within corporate cultures. But it does require... perhaps the rules might have been easier when you were able to compartmentalize, or maybe that's been my experience as a woman in corporate culture.
Well, no, I think you're raising a really interesting point, because the workplace today is certainly very different from when, you know, you and I, and I'm sure a large part of your audience, you know, had your first job. back 20 or so years ago. And things are different. So if you're a new graduate now going into a work stream, the dynamics of the office is different. But here's, if I were to boil it down to the single secret to surviving as a product manager and a product marketer in a company of any size, that one secret has to be being in the ability to master internal communication. And in fact, so I do a lot of work with companies of all sizes, and it becomes immediately obvious to me within maybe 20 minutes of walking in the door and talking to people how good their internal communication is. And oftentimes, marketers and product managers will feel that their efforts in internal communication is actually pretty good. They'll equate the sophistication and the expertise they have in internal communication as if it's an iPhone. The iPhone 6, we're great, it's easy, we got all these bells and whistles, and aren't we sexy? When in fact the reality is they're barely lucky to have two tin cans strung together with a piece of thread. It's actually not as good as they think it is. And this is really important. In fact, one of the lessons that I learned very early in my career is that I needed to take responsibility for doing PR for my own work as a product manager or product marketer. And I can remember working on some launch once upon a time, and we'd be putting in a ton of time in various efforts, and we're actually very proud of work that we had done. And then I have a hallway conversation with one of my colleagues who basically says, I had no idea you were working on that. Why didn't you tell me you were working on that? Because I spent all this time doing this other stuff that I didn't really have to do. And that caused me to pause and think, well, whose job is it really to inform other people in the organization of what I'm doing? And originally I thought, well, it's my boss's job. My boss needs to take a responsibility for telling everybody what I'm doing, and that obviously wasn't happening. And then I thought, well, maybe it's the people who report to me. If I'm the boss, I'm going to rely on my employees to share internally with everything that I'm doing, because I'm so busy doing what I'm doing, I don't have time to go promote it or showcase it. And that was a huge mistake and a huge learning opportunity, because if I didn't take, or as I hadn't taken, personal responsibility to communicate to others what I was doing, they were then making assumptions about their work that ultimately came back to cause heartburn and frustration for me and others on the team. And here's the deal. A lot of that could have been avoided if we had had better internal communication. And that's really a huge part of being savvy in internal politics, is mastering internal communication to kind of smooth the road and to have people really encouraged to perform as a team. And that makes such a big difference. So that's kind of a long perspective, but the short answer is your ability to be effective at internal communication, to share with people what you're doing, the decisions that you're making, the impacts that they're going to have, so they can do their job better, helps everybody, and actually puts you in a position of leadership.
Excellent. So, Mike, as you were speaking, we've gotten some tweets in, so I want to do a shout-out to Gil Zilberfeld, who I think is listening from Israel, great friend of the show, and great tweeter. So he says that you should do your own PR, whatever your job is, which I think we totally would agree with.
Gil is exactly right, and this isn't to be blatant or to promote kind of an egotistical "gee, aren't I great?" But it's really to create a shared experience with your colleagues, and to have everybody know what everybody else is doing really does have a huge benefit. And there are good ways and less effective ways in how to do that. Sometimes it's through documentation and sharing something as simple as the positioning statement. And you had alluded to that in your introduction. You know, what is the one page, the one paragraph description about the value that your promoting in the product or the new release you're working on, instead of giving everybody a lengthy set of files and say, here, go read this. This is everything that you want. People aren't going to digest that well. But if you can distill it down and communicate it either in a single slide or a sound bite or through some other oral or written communication, boy, that makes a huge impact. And taking personal responsibility for that is something that I think all of us in a product marketing, product management role can probably do a little bit better at. So Gil's exactly right.
Hey, and also I failed to mention that if you are listening live, you're welcome to join us on the call. You can call into 323-927-2957. That is our Global Product Management Talk phone number for weekly. You are welcome to call in 323-927-2957. The line is open when we are live on the show. And by the way, this show is available on demand on iTunes, Stitcher. We have a mobile app in the Google Play Store. So you can listen following the show, but if you're listening live, and so I want to do a shout out to Niels Davis, who is tweeting from right here in Menlo Park. And by the way, Niels, been trying to get you on the show for probably years from the beginning. And so Niels has a couple of things to say. He's making some great points. He says, first of all, is there a litmus test for good? Speaking to, you had mentioned, Mike, I believe that, you know, we as product managers and product marketers think we're good communicators. So he wants to know, how can I know if I'm in a good place with communications? And then he goes on to say that, always remember that no one cares about you, which, again, he's resonating with what you were saying. If you want them to know about your stuff, you have to tell them. And because no one has time to proactively learn what you're doing. And Gil, I suspect, yeah, speaks a couple of languages, and he says, the trick, of course, is to speak the same language as everyone else. And I would underline that by saying not only the actual language, but also the technical language. It's very important for product managers, product marketing managers, to be able to speak engineering, to be able to speak the technology that is being used if you are in a tech company, or at least the product language, as well for all of the stakeholders involved, because you have to translate into their listening.
You know what, boy, this is really, really great, and Neil has raised a couple of points here. Let me try to address them. And Neil, you remind me of a story early in my career. So I was a product marketing manager. I was working on a launch, and I was having just a ton of trouble communicating with the engineers, with the product. We seemed to be Hatfields and McCoys. We could not get together. It was hard to have a productive conversation, and it wasn't really clear to me why. And somehow, in this tense meeting that we were having, somehow a little piece of information on my background was brought to the forefront. This notion that, yes, Mike Gosby, I'm in a marketing role, but I actually have a EE degree. And that little piece of information that I didn't think should have been relevant for the discussion at hand, when that piece came to the forefront, the conversation in the room, everybody got immediately quiet, and the leader of the antagonized engineering team, if you will, looks at me and he says, "Mike, if I had known you were an engineer, I would have been a whole lot nicer to you." And I thought, wow, this is really interesting. So to Neil's point about, you have to talk the language, and this is what I learned. You have to talk the language. You have to find a level of shared experience, of a connection with the people that you're working with. Now, in that case, and we can argue that, gee, Mike, I should have clued into that earlier, and I didn't, but once I was able to draw the connection to say, look, my job is to help you, engineering community, translate your products and services into a way that will be most successful in the marketplace. I'm here to support you to get you the product achievements and goals that you deserve, that you desire to achieve. And let's work together, because I've got a perspective that can help you translate kind of what we're talking about as engineering technology subjects into something that's more business savvy. And once we put that on the table, the interaction of myself and the team changed completely. It turned out to be one of the most productive and beneficial product launches that our team had done prior. So that was a huge, huge learning. So the takeaway is, yes, we have to learn to speak the language. We have to show ways to make a personal connection. And then this leads to another point that Neil had arranged. How do you know if it's good enough, if your communication is good enough? And there are two elements in there, and of course you're going to love the answer as well. It depends. But what I personally used was, what was my level of personal frustration? And it's highly intangible, right? But if I can remember days going into the office where it felt like all I did was pound my head against the wall for 8 hours a day, and it wasn't seeming like I was making headways. I wasn't approaching the deliverables that I wanted to be able to deliver. There was something getting in the way. So that was a clue that something wasn't right. And on the other side, when I was able to establish a connection, a shared experience, an understanding that we're trying to achieve the same business outcome, that this is not about Mike Gusby being right and the engineer being wrong or vice versa. This is about, we've got a business problem, a business challenge to solve. Here's an integrated team. How do we collaboratively solve that business problem? And how do we do this as part of this shared team? And when I was able to articulate that and then, you know, communicate that either through the meetings that I was facilitating, where comments like that would have been the overture to the meeting, or maybe it's the notes or the write-ups that happen afterwards that would kind of reinforce that this is a win for the team, not just a win for me, because nobody cares about me, nobody cares about Mike Gusby, but I indeed was able to benefit after the fact when people could look at the notes or the experience in those meetings, and they would feel that they had been successful, and oh yeah, Mike helped them along the way be successful. So my success came about if the team was successful. And that's a really important learning when it comes to internal politics, is that it has to be the team, the shared business goal. If you can make yourself invaluable to the team, if you can help team members meet their own personal goals and directions, if we can share and communicate what those goals are and reinforce those goals at every time and be an instigator of that kind of shared learning, it creates a totally different environment, and you can be much more successful in that. And that inner gauge of how frustrated am I would tell me if I myself thought I was doing a good job or if I needed to do better. So that's, you know, not the most precise answer that I can give, but from my own experience, I found that to be true.
Excellent. So Niels is, let me read his, he's having a Twitter dialogue here, which is great. So he says he's always felt that getting technical credibility with developers is super important for a product manager. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly, because otherwise they won't speak to us. And so he resonated with, I had quoted, if I known you were an engineer, I'd have been a lot nicer to you, which seems harsh, but everyone does this, right? Whether they intended or not, it may not be blatant.
This is exactly the point. So here's another story that perhaps will make sense, right? Dealing with people is hard, and we all deal with people who fit in different bubbles or different perspectives that we have to engage with. We have the developers that depend on credibility is built on being very technically oriented. We need to know the language. We need to know our code. We need to know how technology things work, regardless of what that technology happens to be. But we're also dealing with business people who are maybe in the other marketing department, corporate marketing, maybe in finance, in sales, where their technical expertise is not as deep as ours. In fact, their value is brought in another dimension. But somehow we have to change the way that we talk to different people at different times. And this can be incredibly challenging to do, but incredibly rewarding if we can figure out how to do it right. So I remember earlier in my career, right, working on some other launches, big launches, where I had to facilitate working meetings between engineering, product management, product marketing, and corporate marketing to kind of figure out or navigate kind of our launch strategy. And ultimately, as you would expect, there were points of disagreement or heartburn that actually, on let's say the positioning of the product, on how to position things or phrase things, whether it's through press releases or it's through PRDs. But at the end of the day, if you were to remove yourself from the heated discussion, what I would find is these people are typically saying the same things, but in slightly different ways. So one of the tricks that I would do after having this meeting is, you know, if there was a point of disagreement, we'd break. And then I would meet individually with each of the sub-teams. So I'd sit down with the engineers, and I'd say, you know what, based on your conversation, I think the plan of attack should be this, this, and that, and this, and basically kind of use a lot of the words that they had stated in their case, which I in fact believe to be true. And they would respond and say, hey, Mike, that's great. I think that's the right thing to do. I think that's the great approach. You have my full support. Then I would go meet with the business side of people, and I would state the same argument, but maybe change a few of the words to some of the language that they would understand, and then they would typically respond and say, wow, Mike, I think that's really great. I think that's exactly what we need to do. And I would let each group claim success or leadership in that. So when I'm meeting with the engineers, I'd say, hey, you know what, you guys are right. You guys are pretty smart. And then when I meet with the business people, I'd say, hey, you guys are right. I think you're pretty smart. And so I would be, I'm kind of the glue, and this was in the role that I had as launch boss, I should explain in this case. By being able to kind of meet with the groups first together and then separately, but then to use carefully kind of words and language each understood, but essentially communicate the same point, was able to bring people back together so that they could go off and execute their specific elements of their job, which they were experts at and they knew what to do, but they could proceed with a high degree of confidence and a high degree of alignment that we had. So the importance of understanding your audience and being able to change your personal style and the language you use with them, and specifically, you know, engineering versus business, is very important. And if it's part of your goal to climb the organizational ladder, you're going to want to be able to have expertise to talk to those different groups and to have them view you as kind of a thought leader, or at least a leader in being able to bring some alignment together. So I think that's certainly a really important lesson that I've learned many times, and I have the kicks to the kidneys to help me along the way. But that's a very positive step that you could take as a product manager or product marketing leader.
Awesome. So I just want to do a shout-out to Bree Johnson, to Alexa Atacumpa, as well to Nils Gill and the bunch of other tweeters that have been resonating. Why don't I? Someone asked about, okay, what questions are we answering? So the Q1 was, what is the secret to managing internal politics? And Mike Gosby definitely underlined it by saying communications. Oh, by the way, I told you this would go fast, Mike. We're already at the halfway point. So let me give the station identification. You are listening to Global Product Management Talk. I am Cindy Faye Solomon, delighted to be your host today. You can find us on the Blog Talk Radio channel at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Find out more about this and upcoming broadcast by following us there, as well as going to startupproduct.com. And thank you to our premier sponsor, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management at AIPMM. And today's speaker, Mike Gosby, you can follow him at Mike, M-I-K-E-G-O-S-P-E, is teaching a Mastering Product Positioning course online, and he has offered our listeners today 50% off, as well as members of the startup product community. So I'm going to tweet that out and definitely take advantage of it. It's excellent. Okay, coming back in. Welcome Sean Russell, Gil Zebrofeld, Bree Johnson, and our tweeters. If you are tweeting live, use the hashtag #PRODMGMTTALK. And by the way, the Twitter transcripts of each of these talks, as well as other product events, are available at storify.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Okay, Mike, back to you. So Gil says, it's not about explaining, it's about getting input into the product and value to customers. Good people contribute, period. That I guess he's responding to, how do we define what good communication or what good communicators are?
Yeah, so, and you raise up another point. This was one of the other questions, I think, on the list, which would be, what is some of the best advice that I ever got for managing internal politics? And that would be to surround yourself with very smart people. So, and to basically get out of their way or invite their contribution, and then when they come to execute their job, to actually get out of the way. So let me give you a specific example. So when we're working on kind of a positioning statement for a product, and we want to make sure that there's a connection between what we're building as an engineer and the problem the customer is trying to solve, the best way to do that is to invite kind of a cross-functional team of people in to kind of help you develop and articulate what that positioning statement would be. And the people that you want to bring are the ones who've got specific expertise that perhaps you don't have. So it would be appropriate to bring a savvy salesperson in. You've probably got somebody from engineering, somebody from product marketing. There might be some designated thought leaders throughout the company. And so you might imagine that maybe there's five or six people whose opinion you trust, who are stakeholders, but also have some really good information to share, inviting them into that process. So at the end of the day, when you finish your positioning statement, it doesn't look like you went into a closet and did it yourself. Because if you did it yourself, you're going to get the response of the non-invented here syndrome, where people said, oh, dude, that's great, but I didn't have a chance to participate, therefore I'm going to sabotage your effort. And so inviting these smart people in to participate. So as a, you know, good product manager, product marketer, we want to be enablers that help bring these smart people together to come get the best answer out. And I think that was one of the best pieces of advice that I ever got. And it speaks to that point about, yeah, we do want to get good quality input, but we also want to be selective in who we invite to provide that, because we all know everybody's got an opinion, but not all opinions are equal. And that's something that we have to figure out individually and in your own organizations.
Sure, and that's a key point when product managers are looking at feedback and deciding on feature requests. and feature prioritization. Yeah. Look, everyone has an opinion, and if you ask sales, they're going to have an opinion that will forward their cash and, you know, their sales. If you ask marketing, everyone has an opinion, but you have to really have a methodology, a process, and a ability to identify which opinions make a difference in forwarding the product, and those should be in looking at data and also aligning with what the business case and the business mission is.
Exactly. In fact, this is one of the things I talk about in length in my book, The Marketing High Ground, and in the course you referenced, The Mastering Product Positioning, because there are two types of opinions and things we need to be mindful of, and these are people inside the company, as we've just discussed, but we also want to make sure that we're validating with outside data, third-party analysts, maybe some actual customers, God forbid. So there are ways to do that, and that needs to be an important part of a documented or systemic way that you kind of conduct these kind of exercises, and that's something that I talk about and kind of share at length in the exercises in both the book and the course.
Excellent. So Q2, you may have spoken to this somewhat. What was the craziest personal critique you ever received from a boss?
This was just amazing. There was a heated argument going on. This was early in my career. It was a heated argument on some sort of product-related something. I don't even remember what. But what I do remember was kind of sitting in the periphery of this room, kind of taking notes and listening to what other people were saying, and my boss at the time turned to me and she said, "Mike, where the hell is your passion? How come you're not in here fighting with this?" And I thought that was the craziest response, because to me, passion does not equal being argumentative. Passion equals, is about being kind of a customer advocate, about trying to seek to understand before we're understood and then helping us kind of make the best decisions possible. The way I show passion is not to jump in and, you know, be like a fire hose and just kind of, blab high-energy opinions on things without any fact or basis. A lot of people have that kind of approach. So what I needed to – so first, I thought that was crazy advice, because that was not going to help us solve the problem. But for managing internal politics, what I did have to figure out was how do I work with and manage people who behave that way. And that was a learning experience as well. But I thought that was crazy advice, that somehow being argumentative equaled having passion. And I thought that was, if anything, that was the opposite of what I thought was appropriate.
So to your point, you're making a distinction. It's like, hey, we need to communicate, but communicate where it makes a difference and where it forwards the action to achieving the results.
And it's even more than that, because there are effective ways to communicate and not effective ways to communicate. And I think it's highly ineffective when you've got somebody yelling at a group of very senior, educated people, and to just kind of blast people in public or making business decisions based on he who yells the loudest, I think is ridiculous and usually ends up being a suboptimal outcome. Now, but that's part of the challenge of internal politics, because if you are, you know, let's say you're fortunate enough to work in a company who behaves that way, and I'm being sarcastic, we as an individual, if you look at managing your career at a personal level, the challenge really becomes, how do I become a better, most effective product manager, product marketer dealing with these people, even if my long-term career projection is not staying with this company? So what I mean is, if we can be effective working with those people, I think that's a key learning piece. And, of course, we always have the decision on whether we want to decide to continue working in a company that behaves that way. I know I'm talking about two different topics there, but the key point is I don't think the best business decisions are made by he who yells the loudest. I think the best business decisions are made when you can facilitate effective meetings with very smart people who've got important opinions where you can rally around a shared business objective and really weigh the pros and cons and priorities that affect, you know, what the feature set is going to look like or what the final outcome is going to be. Those can be tough discussions. Those can be animated discussions, but they don't need to be where you've got a distraught VP of engineering yelling at other people. I don't think those are very effective.
I agree. And that's why I have really embraced the product lifecycle management framework, which is about 7 stages that the product needs to go through. As when I pull that out and say, okay, let's assess where we are with the product and let's drill down into what the product needs at this point, and then that serves as a way to bring everyone into the discussion rather than arguing about who thinks we should do what or who has what title or authority. I'm just always looking for ways to bring people together and create an atmosphere of respect and opportunity for people to learn.
And I think that's exactly right. And let me give you 3 specific pieces of communication that I have always found have helped me, and I've seen them help many, many companies. So in developing a product and going through the PRDs and the MRDs, there's a ton of information that we collect. And in fact, you need that information to make good, solid business assessments and judgments. But when it comes to communicating what your recommendation is, whether it's product management to product marketing, whether it's product marketing to corporate marketing or sales, not everybody needs all of that information, and yet oftentimes what happens is you take the whole 30-page PRD and you thump it on somebody's desk and you say, oh, the answers you want are in there, go figure it out. And I don't think that works very well. What I've seen work very, very well is 3 pieces of information that are put on 3 individual slides, and these are the slides that get distributed to everybody. This is part of the communication, managing internal communication and getting everybody aligned. The first piece is reminding everybody the persona, the illustration of the person we're designing the product for. So we want to know who they are, where they work, what problem they're solving, and why they think they would be an ideal customer for whatever our product is. Now, oftentimes, when I ask people, well, who's your persona, I get answers like, Mike, we're designing this product for VPs of network services for the Global 3000. And my answer is, well, great, could you be any vaguer than that? Because I have no idea what that really means. But if you can distill it down to a single slide that actually gives an illustration of this person, who they are, where they work, why we think they're a good target based on the problem that they're trying to solve, this can be huge. And it's a huge piece of aligning the entire organization to remember who we're designing the product for in the first place. So that's the first piece. The second piece is this positioning statement, and you can download the simple statement that Cindy has put up on the website for download. This is a seemingly simple, fill in the blanks, who's the product for, what's the category, what's the primary benefit, and how are you unique and different from any nearest competitive alternative. Now, the magic of the positioning statement is that in a, you know, seemingly simple paragraph, you can use this to articulate the directional guidance of your product roadmap, if you will, or for the product launch, the product that's being launched, and to, in a synopsis form, kind of encapsulate what the primary interest points are of your product. So rather than having somebody to read the whole PRD, or et cetera, they can just use as shorthand, oh, and here's the positioning statement. This is our guide. This is the rudder on which we're going to make decisions. And so when inevitably we get into the tug of war of feature prioritization, we can say, okay, you know what? People are asking for 100 features. We can only include 3. How do we figure out what the 3 are? Go to the persona find out, remind ourselves of the problem they're trying to solve, what's their use case, go to the positioning statement to say who's the competitor we're trying to squash and what do we need to do to be better than that. Those will help guide a much more productive prioritization discussion to get from the 100 features down to 3. And the third piece would be, and this is more something the product marketers are going to care perhaps a little bit more about, is what is actually the story we're going to tell customers highlight what the value that we're offering them. So the positioning statement is internal use only. It's just for those of us within the four walls of the company. It can have jargon. It can be technically complex. But when we transition that into customer-ready messaging, we have to be careful. There needs some finesse that articulates, here's the problem the customer has, and here's why we're relevant to them and why their life is going to be better than before. So if those three pieces of information, which you can largely distill from both the PRD and probably the MRD working in conjunction, if you can distill those down into three slides, and those become the only three slides you share with your partners in sales, the executive team, others in marketing, that goes a long way to avoiding some of this unnecessary roughness that can happen when people forget where the goal is. And then you end up having to re-argue some of the pieces that you'd argued before. It's like, no, remember, we agreed to this. Here are the three slides. This is our guide. We can make decisions to change or alter from this, but this is our guide. And if you have the guide and are consistent to share that information and remind them at the beginning of every meeting or in six-month updates or in annual product reviews, it can just be a huge help. So I wanted to offer those three pieces of how do you know if you're communicating a good job? Do you have those three elements? There are others you could add to that list, but that's my minimum three. If you can have those, you'll help yourself out immensely.
Excellent. So Niels Davis is resonating and underlining what you're saying. He's saying you can use a positioning statement for an elevator pitch as well. It's important.
Yeah.
To incorporate, here's a validated market problem we're solving, which is implicit in the value proposition.
Absolutely. Yes.
Great. So let's see, what else can we... We're coming to the end, so it just moves very quickly. is there a way... And I want to underline, I have tweeted out the resources that Mike Gospie has generously shared. They are available at startupproduct.com. They're both inside the course as well as the free download for the positioning statement, as well as he's put up a YouTube video explaining in depth how to use a positioning statement, and they're available at startupproduct.com. So Q3 was, what's the best way to manage your boss, which I call upwardly managed. Managing up.
Yeah, that's a great subject. And of course, it does come down to communication. And what we need to do, and this is true for everybody, but I think this is especially true if you're a new hire, you're a new college grad especially, we need to make our bosses look good. And yes, this is part of the managing of internal politics and such. But where that starts is making sure that we understand how our bosses are measured and what their expectations are and what their vision is. So here's a quick story. In fact, I was talking with a colleague of mine. He's a CMO for a young company, and he was sharing with me some interesting challenges he had in managing his boss, the CEO. And I'll paraphrase. The CEO sat down with him and says, I have a vision of doing X, Y, and Z, and I'm really excited about this. I want you, the CMO, to be excited about it. And the CMO says, hey, I think this is great. Let me make sure I understand. Let me ask you a couple of questions about what you mean. And what was interesting was the CEO actually took that response as a negative. That response was interpreted to be somewhat combative or not fully on board. And so, and this surprised the CMO, which led to some heavy discussion, which I think has turned out to be a good thing. But the when people think that their vision is obvious, and of course everybody would share the vision, we need to be careful because that is most often the time not true. And it's not that people are negative, it's that we want to understand what that is so we can help them. So we need to find a way to broach the conversation to say, hey, you know what, I share the vision, this is really exciting, but I want to plug myself more into your brain about why you think that way, tell me of more of your experiences. It comes back to building more of this shared experience, this shared knowledge base, so you can help the boss be more effective in articulating where they're going. Now, what might be happening, if we were to peel back the onion and look at psychology, at human psychology, one of the things that might be happening is some psychologists call this the imposter effect. The imposter effect is when let's say you're hired into a new job, and you promote, there's lots of dimensions to the job, and you do one thing really, really well. So you promote that one thing and kind of ignore the things you don't do so well. And so when you're in the role, the persona that you put forward is to highlight your strength and not so much your weakness. Well, what we need to do is, and so it's called the imposter because deep down in the person's mind, they know that there's a little hidden secret that they probably don't want to share. And if everybody found out, they would be deemed as an imposter, and that's where lack of confidence can kind of come into the play. And I'm sure to some level we all suffer from that. That's part of human nature. But I think in managing your boss, what we want to do is help mitigate some of that. And we can do that by being an empowerer, to become a trusted advocate of our boss, not by asking questions in a nasty, nasally, whiny kind of way, but in a seek-to-understand way so we can help promote what their vision, what their goals, what their expectations are. And those conversations best happen, you know, in a one-on-one setting. And it will how you will do this will depend on the chemistry of both yourself and the person you're working with. But these can be very, very positive, very empowering kind of conversations. And it's really under the seek to understand before you're understood role. And if you're new to the role, the best time to have these conversations is like on day number one. If you've been in the role for a while and you're sensing some heartburn or some, you know, lack of traction between you and your boss, you've got a choice. And the choice is, well, we'll kind of continue kicking the can down the road as well as it's going, or maybe I'm willing to take a risk and say, you know what, let's sit down and I feel like we haven't connected right. Let's have kind of this camaraderie conversation. And to my, you may find this surprising, but I think more often than not, your boss will appreciate that conversation as being proactive, about being professional, about being productive. It can feel a little bit awkward. It might put you at a little bit of risk because there might be an expectation that, of course, you share 100% of the vision of your boss when you actually don't. But it can be a very empowering thing for both ways. And I found the best relationships I ever had with my boss is when I made the effort to invite that conversation, and that established kind of a connection or a closeness that I had that was often different and better than what my peers had with the boss. So that's one of the things I have learned along the way as well.
Excellent. And so I appreciate, Mike, this conversation, and as I suspected, we did not get through all of the questions. However, I invite the listeners, as well as Mike, if you want to answer We had 9 different questions, and I'm pretty sure that you answer these throughout your blog, Mike, which, by the way, let me mention Mike has a couple of blogs. One is the marketinghighground.wordpress.com, and the other is customeradvisoryboards.wordpress.com, as well as the Kickstart Alliance. What's the URL for your Kickstart Alliance, Mike?
Yes, you can find me at www.kickstartall.com. That's one word, kickstartall.com.
Great. And so we've come to the end of the conversation so quick, and this was great, especially those 3 points, those takeaways. Neil resonates with your mention of the imposter effect, so when you focus on your strengths. And that's also something for another conversation that comes up, I find, a lot around women in tech, is the imposter syndrome. So I like the spin that you gave on it, looking at it from the effect that we're not intentionally being imposters. Of course, we're going to showcase our strengths. It doesn't mean that we're faking our strengths, because we also have weaknesses. That is a human thing. I want to thank Mike Gospe. Thanks for being on the show today. Gil Zimmerfeld is already saying it was a great show. We have lots of tweets, and I will capture the transcript on Storify. Mike, any last words? And by the way, I didn't mention that you were calling in from the Bay Area as well.
No, this has been great. Thank you very much. I will close by telling you the 3 books on my bookshelf that I personally reference the most often, and perhaps some of these will sound familiar to you. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, awesome book. Getting to Yes by William L. Rye and Bruce Patton. And my all-time favorite, All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten by Robert Fugram. So remember to share, be nice, and take your naps, and you'll do fine. And I found that to be good advice in the business world. So I will close with that, and I thank you very much for everybody's time today. I was delighted to be here. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate it, and I look forward to more conversations. And thank you for your generosity in sharing the Mastering Product Positioning as well as these tools. These are very valuable. And, hey, Mike, would love to have you speak in person at a startup product meetup event in Silicon Valley. So we'll talk about that.
I'd be happy to. Thank you. Absolutely.
Great. So thanks for joining us. Again, you've been listening to the Global Product Management Talk. Hey, thanks to Blame Sally for our music. They're at Blame Sally, and I just got word that they will be performing here in the Bay Area coming up. Thanks to BZ Lewis and Studio 132. And again, join me this Friday at AIPMM for the webinar where we are talking further about culture and the importance of culture to success of product development with Glenn Gefkin, who has authored the book Shift on Shifting Corporate Culture. Join us, follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, and have a great week.
speeding ticket out of Valentine. On a dry winter leaf, I wouldn't know love if you found me.